You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 p.m. on Monday, and so it is time to be joined by one of our amazing guests for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today, we've got Jill Rosenthal. She is the Director of Public Health for CAPAF. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jill. Thanks so much for making time. Let's get right into it. The Trump administration is posing pretty broad-reaching and deep cuts, as well as targeting certain staff at the National Institutes of Health. First of all, let's baseline set. What is the NIH? Like, what do they do, in case people aren't familiar with the NIH? What does it all encompass?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Maggie. I'm happy to start there. So the National Institutes of Health is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, and it is the largest funder of biomedical research in our country. And that is biomedical research is studies of the human body to develop new ways to prevent and treat disease.
So it's important, shall we say. It's incredibly important, both for our nation's research capacity, but also how that research capacity ultimately impacts the health of everyone, you and me and our families. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. So cuts to National Institutes of Health, or NIH, harms public health. It harms science innovation. It harms all of our health and those that we love. And it actually even has implications for economic security. So it's extremely concerning.
Explain that to people who maybe, you know, a lot of my conservative friends tend to support more conservative ideas or policies because it's good for business. So can you help people fill in those dots between research capacity impacting public health and actually being a driver of economic growth, or with Trump's planned cuts and also purges, how we could actually be harming our overall competitiveness and really slowing down or hindering our economic growth?
Yeah, so the NIH-funded research spans more than 300 health topics. So they're researching issues like cancer, diabetes, heart disease, mental health and addiction, aging conditions like dementia, all kinds of different topics. And, you know, that affects all of us. It affects those of us who have illness, those who maybe could get an illness. It affects our family and friends. So it has huge implications in terms of what we know about diseases and the kinds of treatments that we can develop to cure people, and any kind of, you know, prevention. It affects medication development, all kinds of things. And there's lots of jobs related to this kind of work. So the estimates are that NIH funding supported 410,000 jobs nationally and fueled about $93 billion in economic spending in the past year. So, you know, it's a huge impact on the economy. And the estimates are that the economic benefit of NIH spending is more than twice the investment that we make through the appropriation. So it has an impact on research institutions, hospitals that do research. It impacts, you know, again, like drug development. It trains our workforce for the future. So there's all kinds of economic impacts.
Just wanted to make sure that we repeated these key facts, folks. I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. She's the Director of Public Health for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. CAPAF joins me every Monday at 3 p.m. Jill noted that the NIH helps fund over 410,000 jobs nationwide and impacts over 93 billion in economic or commercial activity. And from a return on investment perspective, is thought to provide basically $2 for every buck of taxpayer dollars that go to the NIH in terms of economic activity and growth. And we're talking today about the NIH with Ms. Rosenthal because Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic both funding and personnel cuts to the NIH. All of this in turn will impact your family's well-being. When we look beyond health and, again, these particular economic engine impacts, let's just talk very narrowly about direct impacts here in the state of Wisconsin. Can you tell us a bit about the volume of NIH grants that come into the state of Wisconsin, Joe, and the jobs that it supports here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, in specifically, the state receives almost $600 million in NIH grants, at least did in the last year. And, you know, that's medical research that would be at risk. And that pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in Wisconsin in 1 year. So these are pretty significant numbers. Again, it's jobs, it's economic activity. Some of the research that actually has been happening in Wisconsin are issues around kidney transplants, childhood chronic complex conditions and diseases, prostate and ovarian cancer, the impact of out-of-pocket caps on medication. So, you know, all kinds of research, important issues that are being researched in Wisconsin and, you know, a dramatic impact on the economy. And I think one other thing that's worth pointing out is that the cuts are indiscriminate. They're not related to anything to do with the science or the impact or the usefulness. And they are likely to be cut in areas in particular that the health secretary doesn't agree with. So for instance, there's a concern about cuts in drug development. So that would be issues like heart medications and also issues related to infectious disease research. So in Wisconsin in particular, there were more than $52 million in infectious disease research grants going into the state just in 1 year.
Wow, truly staggering numbers. A couple of things are jumping out at me here, Jill. Just again, to summarize some of these key statistics, Wisconsin, at least in the last year, received upwards of $600 million in NIH grants. That directly supports nearly 8,000 good-paying, family-supporting jobs in the state of Wisconsin and is responsible for approximately $1.5 billion in economic activity here in Wisconsin. But to make the point really plain, Joe, you look at the University of Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, the Medical College of Wisconsin, Marquette University, like our biggest academic institutions, all are beneficiaries of significant grant money from the NIH. And as the recipient of a degree from both degrees from both Marquette University and the University of Wisconsin at Madison, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out those academic institutions themselves. Not only are they educating our kids, but they are absolute cornerstones to Wisconsin remaining a desirable place for business to happen. They're absolute economic cornerstones to Wisconsin's overall competitiveness, hurting the University of Wisconsin system, defunding some of their research efforts, hurting Marquette University, hurting the Medical College of Wisconsin, will have a negative impact about whether or not people want to move here and stay here, not only get educated and trained here, but stay here. And it hurts our overall competitiveness as a state as well. Or am I overstating that, Joe? I mean, to me, the impact, especially in some of our key research academic institutions here in the state, would be devastating.
Yeah, that is a really excellent point. You know, these are bedrock institutions in our communities, and it hurts hospitals all over the country, research institutions all over the country of all kinds of sizes. So some of them are quite large, some of them are small. And, you know, we know what rural hospitals mean in our rural communities. And so to cut funding, that makes it more difficult for those institutions to continue to run is really deeply concerning.
Yeah, I just want to point out that one of the top NIH-funded institutions here in the state of Wisconsin includes the Marshfield Clinic. Again, you start, if you are in a rural area in Wisconsin, if you have a shortage of healthcare outlets, of hospitals with level one emergency centers, hey, take a look at, is your facility receiving NIH dollars? We could be looking at an increasing acute crisis of available care, especially in rural areas in Wisconsin. We're already feeling those pinches. So folks, if you're listening from upstate or the western or northeastern part of the state, go check out, hey, which one of your local medical facilities, especially hospitals with emergency departments, are receiving NIH funding. Donald Trump is looking not to help the crisis of care in rural areas, but in fact, to exacerbate it. I've got with me this half hour, Jill Rosenthal. She's the Director of Public Health with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. They join me every Monday at 3 p.m. If you've got a question for Jill or I, 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. I also want to let each and every one of you know that we've got some resources about the NIH's impacts here in Wisconsin. We're going to put those website links in our show notes for today so you can check out that data and information yourselves. It includes citations for these fundamental facts. $650+ million in a year comes into the state of Wisconsin from the NIH. It supports nearly 8,000 jobs and helps spur $1.5 billion of economic activity in Wisconsin. And again, if you're finding it hard to access healthcare affordably and when you need it in your area of the state, this ain't going to make it better. Only worse. When we come back, we're going to pick up our conversation with Jill. Join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 3 o'clock half hour, and it is Monday, and so that means I'm joined by a very knowledgeable guest for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. This afternoon, we're speaking with their Director of Public Health, Jill Rosenthal, who is reminding us about the fact that every single one of us, in some way, is positively impacted by the work of the National Institutes of Health. We're going to get into, in a minute, Jill, I want to ask you about what's this indirect cost thing and why does it matter? Because it sounds super technical and people may not realize what it's all about. But I wanted to remind everyone, what Jill has been sharing with us is that here are the things that the National Institutes of Health work on. Cancer, diabetes, addiction, heart disease, mental health, and the development of new drugs. I challenge any single one of you out there to tell me you are untouched by one of those issues in you or your family's lives. We all benefit from the work of the National Institutes of Health. And if that ain't enough for you, here's their impact in Wisconsin. Nearly $654 million in grants coming into the state of Wisconsin from the NIH every year. That supports nearly 8,000 jobs and helps spur $1.5 billion in economic activity here in the state of Wisconsin. They're working on things like Alzheimer's disease. Do you know somebody who has suffered from Alzheimer's? Cancer, chronic lung disease, heart disease, stroke? Again, those are all big killers here in the state of Wisconsin. The NIH works on all of that. So to bring it back to, like, what exactly is Trump trying to do? Where does it stand? There's not only personnel cuts, Jill, but also there was a lot of press about this slashing of indirect costs in research grants to, quote, 15%. Help people understand why, what that is, what are they talking about, and why 15% might sound reasonable, but why in practicum it just don't work that way.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a little wonky, but in addition to the funding that folks receive to do the actual research project, they get an extra amount called indirect costs or funds, which help fund the kinds of things that enable the researchers to do their research. And so that amount is set, it's negotiated by the institution and NIH. It's actually set in law that that's the way this works. And President Trump is proposing to cut it to no more than 15%. There are now institutions that are getting 40, 50, 60%. And that's really important resources for these institutions to do the research that they're doing. So that's paying for things like laboratory equipment. It's paying for scientific libraries to do research. It's paying for maintenance of equipment. It pays for support staff, for utilities. And one particularly concerning piece here is that it also pays to train young scientists. So folks who are working on getting their degrees, who are working at these universities, they are dependent on those resources for their job. So if that funding gets cut to 15%, those institutions are going to have to find ways to reduce that the workforce. And that means we won't be training the scientists of the future. So that not only hurts the particular research topic, but it hurts our
training pipeline, basically,
absolutely,
right?
So that we can stay on the forefront of innovation in the future.
Yeah, these two pieces, what I've tried when friends have asked me about it, Jill, I've said, when you're doing the most high-tech, difficult, complex research that is about curing disease and improving overall wellness, you need research infrastructure, the very labs themselves, the software, the programming, all of the updates for that. And it ain't cheap if you want to compete on a global scale and help innovate. It is always the most state of the art. Important here that the negotiation between the NIH and, in most cases, the research institution that is conducting this sort of groundbreaking, life-saving research is written into law to be negotiated, which means there is variability depending on the type of research we're talking about. And so that has been the approach. This to me is an example of the epitome of just across the board cutting with no rhyme or reason, having disastrous impacts. The reason that, Jill, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you mentioned the use of indirect cost percentages to train people is that they're not the PhD holder in given science, so they're not the grant recipient, and yet those people who are the direct grant recipients need to train people. So the actual human beings are oftentimes, the trainees are oftentimes part of that indirect cost. I'll just say this. for those of you that don't know my background, I was both a research and teaching assistant in my master's degree level coursework. I was effectively one of those trainees. My studies were actually covered in part by not an NIH grant, but a grant from the National Science Foundation. I was working on a research project with my professor in economics. So it shows up in lots of places. We are all being impacted positively now by the good work of the NIH, but this in peril and jeopardy. Jill, where do things stand right now with these absolute gouging cuts with no rhyme or reason to them that Donald Trump has proposed?
Yeah, so that's a good point. Because it is in law, it is being legally, the cuts are being legally challenged. And we are right now waiting for that to play out in the courts. So right now there is a stay. So the cuts have been blocked and that's temporary. So we are waiting. There was in fact a hearing just on Friday that extended the cut for a bit. And we're waiting for a final decision.
So the litigation is proceeding right now. Those cuts put on hold. Call up your elected officials in Congress. Call Senator Ron Johnson. Tell them don't cut the NIH. Their business is saving your lives and our lives as Wisconsinites and Americans. Big thanks to you, Jill Rosenthal, Director of Public Health for the Center for American Progress Action Fund, making us all smarter this afternoon. When we come back, everybody, I'll be joined for Dom Salvi, the guy with the great show that follows mine, for a little bit of In Case You Missed It as we review the week's past headlines. Keep it locked, everybody. Back in just a moment. Welcome, everybody. You can bang your head along with me and my next guest, my good friend and yours, the man with the fine program that follows this program every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. His name's Dom Salvia. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Dom, thanks for making time. It's a little chance for us to talk about what we missed this past week.
We don't miss anything, Maggie Dawn. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to catch up.
Good to see you, my friend. Let's start with another day, another Nazi salute. It really seems like this may be a recurring theme here for the MAGA movement. Yes, folks, that's right. It's not just Elon Musk popping off a little Sieg Heil at an inauguration event. No, don't worry. Even Elon Musk's apparently sworn enemy, who's called him a parasite, yes, that's right, Donald Trump's other key advisor, Steve Bannon, also popping out a Nazi salute this past week at the CPAC. This is this Conservative Political Action Committee conference that was going on. Yes, folks, Steve Bannon with a little Nazi salute. You can't hear the salute, but I'll give you the sound where he does it. Kelvin, let's let it rip.
The only way that they win is we retreat, and we're not going to retreat. We're not going to surrender. We're not going to quit. Fight, fight, fight.
And then the Nazi salute. Amen.
Wow.
And then an amen. Yes.
Can I get an amen?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is wrong with people, Dom? Like, why is that okay? Why would anyone who supports the MAGA movement be like, mm-hmm, yeah, you guys should keep popping off a little Sieg Heil? That really adds credibility to our political party.
I mean, the neo-Nazis are even thinking, man, this is getting to be a little much, guys. You know, can you keep
We're supposed to keep the quiet part quiet.
Keep it down to a low roar. You know, the fact that there isn't a massive outcry from the Republican Party kind of tells you everything, right? When the megas are silent in the face of these very obvious, it speaks for itself kind of motions and salutes and so forth. And when there's silence, a deafening silence from that side, and then you see the Nazis are like super excited about it. What does that say? Well, I mean, they have embraced the Nazi mentality. I don't know what else to tell you. If you're on stage doing a Nazi salute at a conservative conference,
guess what?
You're a Nazi.
You're a Nazi.
You're a Nazi.
Well, we've got a guy that is one of our favorite callers who's probably going to say he's not a Nazi, but I want to ask him about it. CJ, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, sir. What's the deal? Can we at least agree that Steve Bannon and Elon Musk should not be doing Sieg Heil at MAGA events, that's probably a bad look?
Well, once again, thanks for taking my call, Maggie and Dom, but you know, you misrepresent what he did. If you heard what he said, I give you my heart. And he grabbed his heart and he threw it up in the air. But that's okay. Did you see today that
CJ, hang on. I'm setting the topics this afternoon and I just want to follow up on this. You can say whatever you want about the context, but that is a very specific image, a salute that has a very specific meaning that most people the world over associate with Nazism. I don't care what explainer you put around it. If we are people of good faith and we want to condemn the Nazis and condemn Holocausts, why is that a good idea? There are lots of he could just put his two hands, clasp them over his heart. If his intention is a good faith one to express not racist, Holocaust-related Nazi imagery, but to express his heartfelt engagement and solidarity with his crowd, there's a million other things that he could do. Why is that gesture acceptable?
Oh, you guys sound so desperate. He is running circles around the Democrat Party.
CJ, can you answer my question, please? Whether you think it is effective rhetoric, whether or not you agree with whatever I say about other things, can you and I say that that is not an appropriate gesture? And that the fact that it keeps being made by people who are leading the MAGA movement is problematic?
You're desperate, Maggie.
CJ, with all due respect, you should be able to say, we should all be able to say, Nazis bad. Nazi salutes bad.
How hard is it to say that Nazis are bad? CJ can't even say it. He won't even address it. Not only is he given cover for Elon Musk doing it twice, he didn't address Steve Bannon doing it the other day at CPAC. It's not about being desperate. It's about calling out what you see in front of your eyes and addressing it. It is a symbol of hate. It is a symbol of murder. It is a symbol of Holocaust. And if you are not offended by that, then I can't come up with another thought as to what your position may be other than you support it, CJ.
Yeah, every time this is what happens with CJ. I do not understand why you simply cannot acknowledge that symbol, that salute should have nothing. If you want people to take your political party legitimately and not call people things like racists and anti-Semites, you had better just say Nazis bad, Sieg Heil bad. Just say it. Be like, gosh, I really hope he meant something else, but he should knock that off. And then we can talk about whatever distractionary slam you want to give for the day, CJ. We got some callers that want to get in here. Eric from Milwaukee, you're up next. Thanks for calling, sir. What do you have to say? Oh, lost Eric from Milwaukee. Eric, call back, sir. You look like a new caller. Always want to get those new folks on the air. Gene from Eau Claire, you're up next. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. You know, he always tries to just change the subject when you ask a question and then go after you guys. It's like getting smoke blowing out of my ears. It's so ridiculous. Come on. I'm not going to say his name or be nasty or anything, but we're not stupid, sir. We don't play that kind of game around here, and it just gets us old folks really upset. And you know,
Your steam coming out of your ears, Gene, and mine and Dom's as well. How silly, silly, silly. We've got Margaret. You're new to the show. Margaret, welcome. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Charles,
and what he's done and the money he's contributed to the party. And he's unelected. And what about all that Elon Musk did for the North Carolina people when they had no way of communicating?
So, Margaret, let's just talk about Starlink for a second. Elon Musk allowing Starlink to assist aid victims, I'm all for it. Like, I'll give him credit where it's due. What do you think about Donald Trump defunding FEMA, defunding the portion of U.S. Housing and Urban Development Department that provides community block grants to communities devastated by those sorts of disasters? Is that also good? Wouldn't, if we're being logically consistent here, wouldn't we oppose those sorts of cuts that are going to hurt those very people Elon claimed to be wanting to help?
Okay, what about all the money that FEMA sent?
I'm just asking you, we can address other concerns you may have about FEMA, some of which have been disproven as simply made-up propaganda. But if we're concerned about the victims of disasters, doesn't that mean we should be increasing disaster funding, not cutting it? So does the inconsistency of Donald Trump and Elon Musk on that point cause you any pause, Margaret?
He sent money to them, not through FEMA. Trump did. And
ma'am, with all due respect, Donald Trump wasn't president when that emergency happened, so Trump wasn't sending any of his own money. And secondly, Donald Trump right now is proposing to cut the very programs that those people need. Do you support those cuts?
I support Trump, and I believe that he has good reasons for the reasons for the different things that he is doing.
And if I may, Margaret, what would be one of those reasons? What do you believe that Donald Trump, what is his reason? You believe that he has good reason for what he's doing? Can you give me an example of that?
Well, he cares about the people, and he's actually making money available for them.
But I guess I'm confused, Margaret. What we know is he's proposing widespread cuts to FEMA, as well as the single largest program that helps fill in the gaps to rebuild infrastructure. This is money that comes through HUD. He's proposing to basically shut that down. It's exactly the things that people in North Carolina need. I just want to be clear. You support those cuts, even though you're also saying that you support disaster relief going where it should?
He's making cuts, but he's also providing what these people need through other means. Biden never did any of that.
I'm just going to hop in here. Margaret, thank you very much for your patience and your back and forth. I think we got to keep trying here. But what Margaret's saying is simply not true. Many of the criticisms of the Biden administration, there was one FEMA official that had instructed staff to skip houses with Trump signs. That official was fired for doing that. Joe Biden put hundreds of millions of dollars towards disaster relief. The fact of the matter is, Miss Margaret, Donald Trump is proposing to cut the very programs that help disaster victims like those in North Carolina. The math just doesn't math. We got to get beyond what we believe or hope to be true and deal with the actual facts. I got Dom Salvia with me this afternoon right here on today's edition of In Case You Missed It with Dom. He's got the fine program following mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Dom, it's kind of like being this... Everything he does is good. It's all fine.
I believe that he wants to help people. Well, you can believe what you want, but again, look, what is his action? What is his record on that? And beyond that, you know, here the coaching in the background. I don't know what's going on there.
I think it's Margaret's husband, maybe.
It's all right, but whatever. You got an advisor, to help out. But you don't specifically address the questions and the whataboutisms and the false comparisons to what Biden did versus what Trump did. I mean, you're off on your timing. You're off on the facts. You're just misguided, Margaret. And I appreciate you trying to chime in and jump in on this, but I think you need to do a little more research. The internet out there. I know people like to do their own research. Tell me exactly how and where Donald Trump, prior to his election to presidency, did anything for anybody during the Biden administration. I'd like to know
didn't.
That. Didn't.
Like to keep his money in his own pocket. Eric from Milwaukee, sir, you're up next. Go ahead.
Yes, just addressing the what CJ said about the gesture by Musk, giving Musk any benefit of the doubt, if he would have done that, any person that did that accidentally, which I don't think it was, would have come back the next day and said, that was a foolish mistake. I did not mean to do that. But he refused to do that when he was asked to do that and followed it up with more jokes, with Nazis in the word.
Yes.
So it's totally disingenuous to say that was a mistake. It was intentional. His grandparents were members of the Nazi party. And, an apple doesn't fall far from the tree, in my opinion.
Yeah, we gotta call BS BS, and that was BS. And here's to everybody, including you, CJ, that's like, oh yeah, it was just a gesture of generic solidarity and how heartfelt he was. If so, here's what I suggest, CJ, and every excuse maker for Nazis that I've come across as of late. Please go find your nearest synagogue, stand outside after Friday services, and pop a couple of those off to the nice Jewish people leaving the synagogue. Let's see what they have to say about it. If it's so okay, and just an expression of solidarity, why not greet a couple of coworkers next Monday morning, or I don't know, tomorrow morning when you show up at work with a couple of Sieg Heils. If it's so inoffensive, take a video of yourself Sieg Heiling your way through the afternoon and post it on the interwebs. See how that sorts out. Folks, we pick up this episode of In Case You Missed It with Don Salve. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. When we come back, we're going to talk about this weird email that Musk sent. Tell me what you do or else, and then apparently retracted it today. Ugh, more chaos when we come back after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Rumble in the streets, but at least we can admit Nazis, or should be able to say together, Nazis
bad. Yes, we could do that.
Sieg Heil, bad. Shouldn't do that. Oh, but sometimes, even those simple points are a little hard to grasp. We got a couple callers on the line. You folks stay right there. I want to get into this. Then we're going to go back to the phones. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. My name is Maggie Dawn. I've got Dom Salvia, who's got the Fine program that's coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Let's talk about this weird freaking veiled threat email. Apparently Elon Musk sent an email to, I don't know, it looks like everybody in the federal government on Saturday that said, tell me what you did this past week and got anything done or you're fired. And I'm not exaggerating here, that it ricocheted across federal government. Socials lit up about it. And what I think is interesting, some Trump-appointed agency heads, so these are Trump's handpicked people, then sent out their own email to their actual people and said, please ignore that claptrap. That's not a thing. This included the FBI, the Department of Defense, Department of State, Department of Energy, Department of Health and Human Services, and Homeland Security. They all told their employees not to respond. It even reached some sitting federal judges who are lifetime appointees under Article 3. So, yeah, I don't know, Margaret. I don't trust the guy that sends out the blast emails to people whom he has no authority over telling people to tell me what you did last week or else.
I saw that horror movie. It's called I Know What You Did Last Summer. I mean, let's think about this for just a minute. The guy doesn't have any authority technically over these folks, as far as I'm concerned, right? And what is more inefficient? What is more inefficient than having millions of employees read this email and start being told different things from different supervisors. Did you get the memo? Did you get the TPS report? Did you get the memo? It's like the office. It is absolutely ridiculous. It is not efficient in whatsoever. When people are bouncing around and the whole everything blows up, well, what's getting done then?
Yeah. Cal, we got a bunch of people on the phones. If you could let them know if we got them screened. I'm going to go to Cam from Appleton briefly. Cam, we got a lot of folks trying to get in on this.
No problem. I just am wanting to make it a little bit clear for people that have any doubts that Elon is waving weirdly or doing a Sig Heil. I think news stations and sites didn't report on this because it's a little complicated for people that don't typically use it. But the short version is that on 4chan, he was pretending to be his alt profile, Adrian Dittman, like a month or so ago. And 4chan's population is largely alt-right.
Yes.
You can use his post ID to search all of the previous things that he's posted on there for years. And all the stuff that shows up, the dude's a Nazi.
Yes. I mean, your alter ego on 4chan, the Nazi alt-right, cesspool, is spewing Nazi sayings and thinkings, and you make jokes about Nazis and the Holocaust. Like, you might be a Nazi, Elon. I'm looking at you. Ron from Milwaukee, you're up next.
Hi. A distinction that a lot of people don't talk about or say anything about is that Trump and his cronies and Elon are going after federal civil servants. And I don't know how many people know what a civil servant is. They're not appointed by the president. They're not appointed by anybody. They're hired on merit. They have to go through tests and everything else and compete with other people for the job. And they're supposed to be non-political. So the first question out of the mouth of the White House is, who did you vote for? And that leads to the second question is, your vote is supposed to be secret and sacred. You don't have to tell anybody, even your employer, who you voted for.
Amen, Ron. That's what they're trying to do. Litmus test. Who'd you vote for? Who do you donate to? And if it's not our guy, you're gone. That's not how federal civil service works. It's not how civil service works anywhere. These are apolitical people who just want to come and do their job. They have a given area of expertise. That's what it's about. That's who they're going after. Because, you know, apolitical experts will on occasion tell you the truth, repeat some facts. Maybe that's not convenient for you. Darby from Madison, you're up next.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My greatest worry is watching them literally gut the government so that when it's time for a new government, everyone will be on board about Trump staying. Everyone. He'll have no one to push back. And this is the lesson that he learned the first time, that if you want control, you have to get rid of everybody with a conscience.
Darby, 100%. Dom, your reactions. We're going to try to squeeze at least one more in here, too.
It's the playbook. It's an old playbook, and it's coming back around again. Great points.
Alec from Milwaukee, you're up next on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend? Alec. Oh, we lost him. Sometimes that happens. Last but surely not least, Mark from Prairie Sack. Make it brief, friend.
Yeah, there's a way to make it to a heartfelt gesture, and Musk hasn't done it, and Bannon didn't do it either. I mean, you have your hand open and the hand is facing the people, and it's below your shoulder, so that's if you're reaching over.
Yeah, a couple tips.
We all know what it's like. I mean, if there's any way to just flash in like that, they do it for a Nazi salute so they can bait us and they can wink at one another. Yeah, we're all little Nazis, and we're going to do it like this, and that FAQ Cubis, I've doing a Sig Heil. Well, we didn't mean it to be a Sig Heil. It was just a open-hearted gesture of friendship.
Right.
Garbage. Yeah, you did. Uh-huh. It's a Sig Heil, that quacking thing with the feathers and the webbed feet. Yeah, it's a freaking duck, gosh darn it. Thanks so much to my friend Dom Salia, who joins me every Monday at 3:30. Keep it locked. I'll stand up for you. Remember, always, it's better when we stand together. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.